is Andrew Fox, and you're listening to Seriously Loco.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Loco, the Seriously Crazy fan podcast for El Paso Locomotive FC, brought to you by Roughneck Scarves and a proud member of the Beautiful Game Network. I'm your host, Phil Bakke. Tonight, it is just a duo. I am joined by Austin Young. Austin, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me, and hey, everybody. How's everybody doing tonight? Well, I guess today. Yeah. Listening, it's Thursday now, right?
Yeah, you're probably listening to this on your commute, unless you stayed up late and caught it at the drop time. Maybe that's something that we should think about doing like drop parties.
Yeah, right.
when I post it, we can have like Supreme or Hypebeast drop of the podcast.
Right. I mean, there's been a couple times where I'm going to bed at 3-4 in the morning and you already upload. So
yeah,
it's doable.
I try to do it at night. That way I can sleep in a little bit in the morning and there's no pressure, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, people with the early commute can already get it.
Yeah, exactly. And I know there's a few people out there who hound me whenever we, you know, delay a little bit or have to miss an episode. So I know I gotta keep everybody happy. I'm looking at you, Lou. That's no, but seriously, this is a little bit of a weird one. We're coming into this one. Disappointing loss this weekend away at Orange County. 2-0 ended up being the final score. Overall impressions of this match. I mean, we had a pretty good performance, created some chances, but ultimately we talked about last week. The game was primarily about two things, being clinical, which we've struggled with all season, but on the other end of the ball, it was about containing Michael Seton and Darwin Jones, and both players score. It's a 2-0 loss.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I don't know how you feel, but this is probably Orange County surprised me with their press. It seemed like they were pressing for all 90 minutes, and effectively, too, it seemed like that was the best press we've played against all season. And there was a couple passes where you could tell it was rattling the defenders in the midfield, but you're right. It's a weird dynamic. It's probably one of the best games they've played, and it's still with the multitude of errors, just couldn't finish. And it seems like that's been the story of the season.
Yeah, it really felt weird because, you know, in the past we've definitely seen these games where they go by, 90 minutes goes by, and you could say we could play 900 minutes and not score. This wasn't like that.
No, I mean, we had multiple chances, and I don't know if it's a confidence thing at this point, just not seeing the ball go into the net, or if it's an execution, it's just a matter of not getting the ball in, and you can tell it's getting to them, and who knows if at this point it's a tactical issue or mental, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so the lineup comes out for this one on the social media graphic always is a little different than, you know, how they line up in reality, because they've got the little player silhouettes and everything, yeah. And they're trying to fit them all on the field. But we had what more or less shaped up to kind of a 4-2-3-1 like we've seen in the past, with our normal back four. Moses Makinde was in there for James Kiffey, though, so a little bit of a different look there. But Richie Ryan and Yuma in midfield, then Ross and Salgado kind of providing that wide attacking mid sort of feel, and then Velasquez in behind in that number 10 role behind Kiesewetter. I mean, we talked, this is the same lineup minus Kiffey that got the win at Vegas. The setup, I mean, coming into this match, that setup, did it make sense for you?
It did. Just executed on the pitch was a little weird. I don't know how you felt watching it. I think probably until like 20-25 minutes into the game, I didn't see Salgado on the pitch at all. It seemed like Ross kept drifting over to the right side. So I don't know if those were the runs he was directed to or if Salgado was just dropping back a lot. But I don't know. I feel like maybe that formation wasn't the right one for this type of press. I don't know if Mark was expecting the press that Orange County brought or not. So, I mean, if it was me, I would have gone with a little bit more secure in the midfield. Probably would have played Contreras instead of Velasquez, but
It is an interesting one because there's kind of a double-edged sword when you have that continuity coming from one match to the next, where we have been so we've had so many injuries. We've had so little opportunity. Mark's had so little opportunity to select the same 11 2 weeks in a row, or at least close to it. And he, even this week, he wasn't fully able to do it. But he picks more or less, you know, really close to the same lineup. And while giving that continuity to our players is obviously good, giving the opponent a look at this is how we played last week against Vegas, and this is how, you know, this is what Vegas did wrong. This is what they get to watch that film, and now they're facing exactly what they're seeing on the screen. There's kind of no, there's not much unpredictability about how we're going to go about our business. So that's the one downside to keeping the continuity versus switching it up. I think it's the right call to try to build some momentum, especially with how well the team played in Vegas. I don't blame Mark at all for sticking with the lineup that worked. But like you said, OC did find a lot of ways, especially early, to really kind of get under our skin with that press and rattle us.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, this is one of the first times, and so I can't even count in how many games, that it seems like we always go through the same pattern where the first 15, 20 minutes of each half, every game, we control the ball, we control the possession, but it seemed like they can never get into the rhythm. It felt like Yuma was struggling a lot with a couple passes, and I don't know why they seem so rattled. If Vegas brought that same kind of pressure, maybe not for the entire 90 minutes, but I'm not sure what might have happened to these guys. They seem kind of lost out there at times.
The early stages of the match, OC definitely had much more control, had us pinned back a little bit. Yeah. We had trouble getting out of our own defensive third. As things kind of progressed and as we started to figure out pass out a little bit better, probably right around what you're saying, right around, like, I would say between 15 and 20 minutes, we started to really kind of figure out how to break the press, and we started executing a little better. As we grew into it, Omar started to assert himself on the match a little bit more, and this match ultimately becomes the Omar Salgado match, probably not in the way that he would have wanted.
I agree. I mean, there was many runs that he had were fantastic. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about it right now, that offside, like, was called back on his goal. I mean, he really controlled his side in this match, really.
Yeah, we had those couple of early chances, Velasquez and Ross going close to that far post, both from kind of that right-hand side of the box. Ross tried that chip. Nearly worked for him. Velasquez tried a, you know, low-driven shot, goes just wide of the post, a little unlucky in both circumstances. But then, as you said, the offside goal comes in. Great pass played through by Nick Ross, run onto by Omar Salgado. Good finish as well.
Oh, fantastic.
But then the flag's up. I mean, for you, we discussed it before we started recording, but I mean, for you, is it an offside?
No. I mean, granted, you know, it's when you're watching it, obviously your emotions take over and you want it to not be, but I think, like you brought it up, he's not even in frame.
Yeah.
We see every single defender on there. I don't know what the linesman was looking at to make that call. I mean, we need more camera angles more than anything, USL. Like,
I have no doubt that it's a close decision.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how as you said, from the angles, it's tough to tell. But it was such a, we always talk about, especially being on the road, but we always talk about with Lokomotiv, scoring first is so important because we're not really built to come from behind. We've only won 1 point from a losing position before, and that was against Tulsa a couple weeks ago. That moment, not only is, you know, obviously disheartening given the end result, but it's disheartening in the moment for a player who has been struggling at times to put the ball in the back of the net.
No, definitely. And I mean, let's be honest, if that flag doesn't go up, that's a game changer. I mean, Lokomotiv will probably keep pressing for a little bit longer, but then they're going to drop defensive, which I personally still believe, I don't know how many people are still on this train, that we probably have one of the best back four in the league. I mean, so even going up 1-0 on the road, being up 1-0 is very difficult for multiple teams to come back from against Lokomotiv. So ultimately, you know, that goal that should have been really could have changed this whole game. I mean, and same thing, like you say, Salgado's really been struggling this season. He's got, what, 4-5 goals?
I believe 4.
He's got 4. And, I mean, you can tell that it's getting to him, it's frustrating him. And with also, you know, not just him, but the rest of the squad, because it seems like the story around the league is that the Lokomotiv rely too much on Kiesewetter. And you can tell that it's possibly in the back of the mind of every single other player on the team, knowing that, hey, well, you know, we need to contribute too. So, especially coming from a guy who's naturally wants to put the ball in the back of the net and is not doing it, that can really not just struggle with that aspect of your game, but overall the way you play, because that's the only thing you're focusing on.
Yeah, it is. It is just the 3 goals actually 3. This season for Omar. Had to get the stats intern on that one, but from there, the match is pretty back and forth. There's a lot of, and it didn't feel too dissimilar to what was going on in the first half at Vegas,
yeah.
Because despite the fact that it was end to end, Orange County weren't creating too much that was dangerous, and we had the few chances that we created in those first about 25 minutes. So, I mean, there's reason to feel optimistic about how things are going. Yeah. The opener for Orange County, one of the strangest goals that I've seen from that set piece. Is it just a case of Seton jumped higher than everybody expected him to get?
I think so. I mean, you're right. It did feel kind of weird, like just out of the blue, the way it happened. But I don't know. It's weird to explain it.
Yeah, like as the ball floats into the penalty area, Ketterer moves out to catch it because it looks like it's overhit, and Seton jumps, and nobody jumps with him. No one's really competing with him for that header. He just has like a free, kind of a free jump, which is, I just couldn't tell watching it. I couldn't tell what was going through everybody's mind aside from, oh, this is like, it's been like the free kick is overhit. There's no way anybody is getting
it's gonna get cleared out and resume play.
Yeah, and I mean, Ketterer obviously most confident of all because he came all the way off his line, and he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to catch this and we'll restart. And Seton somehow gets to it.
Yeah, I mean, people are always going to judge Ketterer probably for him coming out that way. But when it's hit a certain way and you're a keeper, you just go after it. But at the same time, you got to get on the rest of the squad. I mean, the defense, you got to go up for that. When you got somebody like Chiro in there too, you know, this height, you just got to go up for it. So I don't know if there was a miscommunication there or what happened, but they got to fix that, definitely.
Yeah, it isn't for as good as the defense has been, and I have to say, like, despite some of the rough patches and some of these games that have been, you know, two or three goals given up, or there's been some like rough times. Overall, we've conceded, you know, 30 goals. I think we scored 30. We're like right on the same.
I think our differential is pretty even.
But
even that,
we have one of the best like goals against records in the USL. We also have one of the highest clean sheet records in the USL. Yeah. So obviously the defense has performed this season. But there is quite a few examples on set pieces where we've conceded kind of soft goals. The RGV at home, New Mexico at home, Vegas at home. The list kind of goes on.
Yeah, in just terms goes on.
Of conceding from set pieces. Like, there's been plenty of games where that's the only chance the opposition has,
and they take advantage.
And they can take advantage. And so that was just a really strange one. And obviously, it's a double whammy because you get. Not only do you get that goal, but it's 10 minutes before halftime, and it's after you've had the ball in the back of the net with a flag up for offside. Yeah. So the impact of that goal was even greater than just going behind by a goal.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a 1-0 deficit. It felt like a 2-0, really, once it went in. I mean, it's like you can ask any player that's ever played when you get a goal call backed, it's the worst feeling you can have because you feel like, all right, we finally got our chance. We're finally getting behind this, and it's they take it away just like that. So trust me, it's like getting the wind knocked out whenever that does happen.
For the other interesting thing that happens right before halftime is Richie Ryan goes into a challenge near midfield, picks up a yellow card right before halftime. One of the conversations that's been going on for a while is talking about trying to protect players who are potentially, you know, near suspensions for yellow card accumulation, you know, five games, yeah. or five yellows and you're suspended for a game. Richie was suspended after he got, you know, he got sent off in the game against RGV at RGV and was suspended for the Tulsa match as a result. The second half the teams come out for the second half and immediately Richie Ryan substituted, Choppa goes on in his place. Do you think that Richie not being on the field in the second half had an impact on some of the things that happened in the second half?
Definitely, but I mean, one thing I do wonder too is if Richie possibly came off for injury because he did go down in the first half.
True.
So who knows if that's an injury that kind of just lingered on into halftime. Because, I mean, Mark isn't known for making halftime substitutions.
Right.
But you're right, there was a bit of an impact. Anytime Richie's not on the field, you can tell that there's a bit of, not worry, but how would I put it? Like, the players are a bit lost without their general on the field, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously your goalkeeper is going to kind of direct the team. Chiro's back there, but the midfielder really kind of distributes the ball the most. And again, to me, I think Yuma had probably not that good of a game. Yeah. So, I mean, taking Richie out in that situation, unless he was hurt, I think wasn't the right move. It probably could have really helped out the attacking third kind of develop a little bit more and gotten a couple more extra chances on top of what they were already getting.
Right. And it is a tough decision because, yeah, I mean, obviously if it was an injury, then it's one.
That's a whole other story, yeah.
And yeah, if that's the case, then hopefully he's ready for Saturday.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the second half, though, it looked kind of similar to Vegas in that we came out of the half looking like the team that was more likely to score in those opening about just shy of about 20 minutes in the second half. Seb Velasquez has a chance from a tight angle and blazes over the bar.
I think he even had that little like spin move in there, no?
Yeah. Seb Velasquez continues to be the kind of primary outlet for when Locomotive are having trouble breaking a team down. They give it to him, and yeah. He can dribble past some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like him and Seba Contreras, they're kind of both play the same role, and you're right, it's kind of their bailout. Because we've seen Velasquez make some incredible runs this season.
Yeah.
Where he just takes it from, you know, the beginning third all the way to the attacking third, and sometimes like looks like he's going to put a shot in. So, I mean, he's one of those players that will either take it down to the attacking third or will get fouled doing it to get a set piece. And that's the kind of player you need on every squad that's not going to ask for the ball, you know, 50 times a game. But when he gets it, he really does make an impact.
The biggest moment of the match happens in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's the 58th minute. Velasquez actually, after a nice little bit of footwork, plays a perfect ball through for Omar Salgado. Omar does everything right, gets past his man, gets past the keeper, and then drags his shot wide. About 30 seconds later, long ball over the top from OC, and Darwin Jones scores the second. I mean, it's basically the cruelest possible thing that can happen to a team and to their supporters.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think this is probably the second time Omar's missed a wide-open goal like that this season. Once you get past the keeper, there's no, unless you're literally, like, on the byline, like, have absolutely no angle on it. There's no excuse for you missing that.
Yeah.
He has a clear shot on it. He probably hit it with the wrong part of the foot. Who knows?
Yeah.
But Omari's got to finish those. I mean, he can... We talk about not having that mindset for the goal, if it can be mental or what, but in those situations, it's you can't miss those. And, I mean, look what it leads to. It quick counterattack. Counterattack.
Yep.
And it seems like that overball on our defense just keeps biting us when we're behind. You know, it seems like too many teams are getting aware that just playing the ball over us is going to create some separation. And it seems like every other week that keeps happening.
Yeah, it is. The idea of going, you know, as soon as Omar is around the keeper, you're thinking, all right, 1-1. We can do this. We can go and win this game because there's still plenty of time left. It's only, you know, there's half an hour to play or over half an hour to play. And we can go and get a result here, you know, from being down a goal. To go from that to now you're down 2-0 in a matter of, you know, in less than a minute.
Yeah.
There's just something so shattering about that just from a mental standpoint. And I can only imagine the impact on the players.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, another thing really quick on the Omar one. I mean, I don't know if anybody has felt like it, but I was a little worried seeing him go up 1-on-1 against the keeper just because back in the first half, he had another chance and had his head down the whole time. By the time he brings it up, the ball's like a good 10 feet in front of him. The keeper's right in front of him. So you're right. It can mess with the player's mental. With the morale, it's like whenever you're playing FIFA, it has ever, like, you know, you go down 2-3-0, and you can tell even on the players in the video game, the morale goes down. It's just like automatic, especially after a big chance that you could have had. It's just that moment of, you know what, I guess the ball's not going in tonight, no matter what we do.
And yeah, that came up later in the match, which we can speak about in a second, but. After we go down 2-0, and I do have to give a shout out to Darwin Jones on the goal,
yeah.
Because the touch to bring that ball down and then to finish was really just fantastic. I can't take anything away from the finish at all. And I mean, ultimately, it kind of underlined exactly the difference between the two teams that night, where their two shots on goal both went in,
yeah.
And we had zero, and that was ultimately the difference.
It really is, and I mean, when a team can capitalize on just very few shots on targets, I mean, we've done it before.
Yeah.
We're, I think, when was it, Paso Strong, who did we play? We played Tulsa, right?
Tulsa.
I think we had, what?
Tacoma. Yeah.
We technically had, what, like one shot on target, but we still scored, like, two goals, so I mean, it's... Especially when you get no shots on target, you don't get the keeper to play anything. That's when it really starts to like boil down onto, are you really taking the best shots available or are you just slinging it?
Yeah.
You know?
The end of the game, Mark tries to change things. We haven't often seen him make all three subs.
Yeah.
Before about, you know, he'll normally make that third sub late in the game, like into stoppage time, basically. Yeah. He'll always hold that third sub just in case there's like an injury or something like that. In this case, he's obviously desperate to win. He throws on Aaron Gomez, and Alexi Bassetti makes his debut. There's a few minutes after the sub where it looks like, oh, okay, maybe this is doing something. Maybe this is going to change the dynamic. Maybe it's something a little less predictable for OC to deal with. But after that, it just looked kind of disjointed. Mm-hmm. And do you think that it's when a coach makes those changes, obviously Mark doesn't have many options. He's trying to win the game. He's trying to get after OC. But when you bring on that many players and then especially Bassetti making his debut,
yeah.
Is it almost kind of too much change at once into that attacking line where they haven't really made those connections and it's not going to come together in a random, you know, 20 minutes at the end of a game.
No, yeah. And I think the situation that we were in, it was the wrong time for Alexi to come in. I think Mark, as much as he wanted to finally bring him in, I think they were just waiting on his work visa to come in.
Yeah.
That's not the situation to bring him in. You're right. There's no way that, yes, he's been practicing with them, but nothing beats the game environment. So if you're expecting something to happen within your squad and a new player, this is the first time game speed on a pitch with them, it's not much is going to happen, especially when you're down 2-0, because everybody's just pressing to get the ball down the field and try to get some chances created. So I think Bassetti was the wrong change there. I don't mind the Aaron Gomez change at all, yeah. Just because he's come into that position before. He's able to kind of handle himself a little bit more out there. But, yeah, I would have held off on bringing Bassetti in, personally.
The lid on the goal theory that occurred was about the 88th minute. Kind of a random chance falls to Yuma. Interesting technique. Yeah. I called it a you know, almost like a defender's technique in terms of shooting.
Yeah.
Pulls off a shot, hits the underside of the crossbar, comes back out.
Yeah.
Just not our day.
It really wasn't. I'm telling you, it's like, it felt like a FIFA game. Like, once you hit like two or three posts, you're like, that's it, I'm not winning.
Yeah.
You ever had that, like?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, that's really what it kind of felt like, but you can tell Yuma wanted that, though.
Yeah.
And it's, I know it's a bad thing to say, but I'm still, like, hoping somehow Meshack can, like, get healthy and come back somehow and still score one of those goals before anybody else. Yeah. But, yeah, you can tell. I mean, you're right. It's kind of like that defender technique, though, like, when they're right outside the box and just try to put all the power behind it and hopefully goes in. But it seemed like just the ball didn't want to go in the net for us.
Yeah, it is a tough loss. It's especially tough given the fact that, obviously, it's getting towards the business end of the season. The Western Conference, currently, Lokomotiv sit 12th, although...
seems like we've been at 12th for the past couple weeks.
Yeah, although with games played, you know, most of the teams in the West have played at least one, if not two, more games than us, so there is still plenty of ground to be made up. But this was... Definitely a situation where coming away with nothing really felt like a big blow to Lokomotiv as they're searching for those points to get them up into those playoff places.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, we're at 36 points. Just to even get into playoff talk, I mean, a simple win and a little bit of help would get us right into the top 10. But excuse me, it seems like everybody in those top 10 spots just keep rolling. And it seems like everybody's saying that the Western Conference from two or three down is going to be so much different come mid-October when the season ends. But I don't know about you, I haven't seen much movement. It seems like everybody's just riding the wave. And if one team's about to move up, then the team that needs to lose just ties or wins to keep there. And
yeah,
it's going to be a tough road to climb, but as optimistic as I can sound, I don't see them finishing any higher than six. And even that's going to be a hard road coming in the rest of the season.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, as it stands, if they win the two games that they have, or really if they win the one game that they have, you know, additional to, or if Lokomotiv win that one game, because they're them and Fresno are the only two teams in the West that have only played 27.
Yeah, and Fresno's playing tonight, I believe.
Yeah.
Wednesday night.
I don't know how that's going. I know Tampa Bay lost earlier, which doesn't affect us whatsoever.
The only Western,
but it was a surprising loss.
The only Western Conference game happening today is Fresno and RGB. They haven't kicked off yet.
There is a big chance, obviously, with the three points, they can move up to 10th level with LA Galaxy, although they would probably go ahead on goal difference.
Yeah.
And then
R1 to their -7.
Yeah. That's actually kind of blows my mind that they're in 9th with a -7 goal difference. Them and Vegas have the same goal difference, and jeez, Vegas is in 14th. But anyways, I digress. The one thing that I kind of wanted to add, a little segment I wanted to add, I was inspired by Mika diving into the stats of Andrew Fox's performance in Vegas. So now each week I just want to pull out like a few notable stats, just a couple of players each game, talking about the things that, you know, the positives and the negatives.
We got to look at that kind of
shaped things, and just always, it always helps to look at the stats to because you watch the game and you have your own perception of how you watch it unfold and which players did well, which players were bad, that sort of thing. You kind of have those notions, but then when you look at the stats, sometimes it doesn't match with your eye test. And so using the stats to give us some context, I think will help a little bit. And so the notable stats this week, number one, we haven't said his name yet. Well, you said his name, I think, in a different context earlier this episode, but Jerome Kiesewetter, he touches the ball 32 times in this game, but he has one shot and it's blocked the entire 90. Jerome Kiesewetter, obviously he has had a goal, against Tulsa, missed a penalty against Vegas. Is it just a case of us not getting him the service that he needs to be that deadly striker that we saw when he first joined?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe it's him still coming back from the injury, but I'm still feeling like his runs are a little off more than anything, and necessarily the service balls to him. So I'm hoping it's just a matter of him kind of getting back into it. This is his second or third start since he's been back.
Yeah, I think third.
Third starts, I mean. I'm hoping it's kind of like a take when he joined us at the beginning of the season where it took him about four games to get going.
Right.
So I'm hoping that maybe it's that just getting back into it type of deal from the injury. So because he definitely had a couple runs that looked a little wonky. So we'll see what happens in these coming weeks.
Yeah, I think it is interesting because for him to only have the one shot, you know, that means it's not he's not getting on the end of any crosses and all that stuff. So, and that was where we saw him, you know, extremely deadly during that scoring run when he was climbing the, you know, golden boot charts and all that stuff.
And then this guy took off in Phoenix. What is it?
Asante.
Yeah, Asante.
He's just a freak.
Jesus, I think he's already like at 20.
He's got most goals and most assists in USL. He's an absolute monster.
I swear, Phoenix doesn't win like the league.
There's something wrong with them. No, that's a...
There's something going down in Phoenix because last year they lost it too.
Yeah, they lost in the final. So I know they'll be out for revenge. It probably won't be against Louisville, but
I know Tampa Bay's looking pretty good.
Tampa Bay, they had a rough loss tonight against Ottawa, 90th minute winner, 1-0. But anyways, the other player, obviously, we talked about it, and I tweeted after the match. I said, you know, Omar's miss ends up being, unfortunately, kind of the hinge on which the match swung. So basically, when that moment happens, all the momentum, literally, because the ball's in the back of the net at the other end right after his miss, all the momentum swings, you know, the wrong way, you might say. But Omar, as you said, pretty good game. He has 3 out of 4 dribbles completed.
Not bad.
3 ball recoveries, which is, you know, winning back possession for the team. That's always good from a forward.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what Mark preaches too. So.
But then the key stat, he has 3 shots, 0 on target. And, you know, unfortunately, the one that would have been on target was called for offside.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is an issue when your 2 notable forwards aren't have any shots on target. Or like to say, what do they say, on frame?
Yeah. On frame,
geez. But yeah, it's definitely an area of concern. And I think hopefully Mark addresses it this week and addresses it going into, you know, late September, early October, where in the home stretch of the season, like you said, it's the business end. You need to get points where you can take them. And this is a game where it could have easily came away with 1 point. And who knows if the ball would have rolled a certain way a couple times, you could have come away with 3. So it's... I don't know if they got to like sleep with like a soccer net next time or something, you know, but they need to get on it.
They need to, dream about scoring, like visualize.
Yeah, get one of those like little kitty ones and just put it on the bed with them.
Obviously, with a match like this, we talked about it. It's not a bad performance.
It wasn't.
It's a bad loss, but most of the players played. pretty well. And one player in particular that I wanted to pick out, because in this match, I would say it seemed like Brian Rebillon was not as impactful in an attacking sense. And I think I think that was deliberate from Mark, in that he had the fullbacks play a little less attacking than he normally did, because I think he was concerned about Jones and Seton like getting behind and having space on the wings. So he played them a little more reserved. But Rebillon, throughout this game, he completes 53 out of 60 of his passes for 88% completion rate for a fullback, which is pretty ridiculous, including 10 out of 12 long passes completed, and won all six of the duels he had. So whether that's a player trying to dribble past him or a header in the air, he won all six. So Brian Rebillon, I mean, we've talked about him since the beginning of the season, but still consistently putting in, even if it's not flashy and not showing up, you know, with assists or goals or anything like that, still putting in just absolute shifts out there.
It's almost like these stats are amazing, but it's almost expected from him. Like, honestly, like when you look about it, Rebillon's put it together a hell of a season, and it's, like I said, it's almost expected from him to put these numbers together. And I bet you when other people from around the league that really don't follow Paso see these stats, you know, they're kind of amazed. That's why he gets recognized every once in a while on Team of the Week. And, you know, it's always very well deserved by him. So he had another great game, and it's almost like the time that he doesn't have a great game, that's when we'll talk about him more than anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they say you never talk about a kicker in football until he misses a field goal.
Yeah. No,
so I think that's how it's going to be with Rebillon. Like,
it's the curse of Rebillon, because he's so reliable that he's only worth mentioning when he fucks up.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've obviously rated Brian really highly ever since he started playing for the club, and so it's always good to see him put in a good performance. I'm still holding out hope. You talked about the Meshack bomb, goal. I think Rebillon's got a screamer in him the end of the season. I think it's him and Velasquez with that, the Colombian.
Yeah.
Just they want to like show Velasquez, off the style.
Yeah, no, but I feel like Velasquez would be more the curl in, top bends. And
yeah. He's tried to shape for it a couple times this season.
Yeah.
Where he's outside the box, he's trying to get it onto his left foot and gets closed down. I think he could definitely, maybe a little friendly wager between between the Colombianos, right. Who can grab that outside the box goal first.
I feel like Velasquez was going to do that typical person who used to play with Madrid and FIFA, like with Ronaldo.
Yeah.
The cut back in and finesse shot into top
finesse
end.
Shot.
Yeah.
Spam RB or R1, R1, depending on your system. But that's
how I feel, is going to get one of those from outside of the box. He's just got like that. That what do they call it now? That drip or
he's got the swagger, drip, the sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Whatever you want.
we're getting old, Phil.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's just got that little swagger where he can just put that in. So
yes, Sebastian Velasquez. I talked about his dribbling on Twitter during the Vegas match. It was very apparent. Mm-hmm. In this match, he attempts 8 dribbles, completes 5 of them, and that was the most 5 dribbles completed was the most of any player on the field. So, showing once again, obviously a little bit lower percentage wise because he was 4 out of 4 against Vegas. Yeah. But you're not going to be 100% every time in dribbling, unless you're like Messi or something. But the overall takeaway is, we've got some solid performances in there, but ultimately the one that mattered was putting the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing.
That was like the one phase of the game that they couldn't figure out.
Yeah. And it feels like it's a common theme this season, basically.
It
like,
really is.
Like what we have lacked since the beginning is just putting it all together when we get into that final third and that last pass, that shot, just getting it right, making the right decision. We talked about it, I want to say, the first, like, 6 or 7 episodes of just decision-making, and now it's...
We're back at it. And
it's more... I would say it's more about execution now.
Yeah.
Where, like, the decisions even being made are fine. and it's just we're just not pulling off the technique or the finish that we want, where we have, you know, Omar literally doing everything right to get past
and just a
defender,
finish.
Keeper, and then just gets it wrong before, yeah. You know, right as he's about to tap it into an empty net.
He probably could have walked that in too.
he probably didn't have to shoot.
Yeah. But I mean, we're at that point in the season, I think, where we have to start thinking about if Mark's going to bring anybody else in the off season, or is this purely a technical thing, you know?
Yeah, and it will be an interesting, for the amount of changes that Mark has made throughout the season this year. I mean, it could be a whole meme of us just saying, I think that's it. I think he's done. I don't think they're doing any more business.
And then the Billy Mays comes out.
Yeah.
But wait, there's war.
Yeah, exactly. We said it before Kiesewetter was brought in.
Yeah.
And since then, we've brought in Velasquez, Bassetti,
Makinde.
Like, there's, yeah, that could be a whole super cut of us just saying, no, I don't think they're doing any more business.
Yeah.
To listener questions, so I mean, take all this with a grain of salt. But
if anybody out there knows how to do Photoshop pretty well, can you put Mark Lowry's face on Billy Mays?
But wait, like, there's more. Damn, that would have been good. Why didn't I think of that? Damn, that is good. But I mean, with all that being said, it is that time to move on to the listener questions. So we got a couple in here. There's always more questions after a win.
Yeah, definitely.
But,
more hot takes after a loss, but
I called out Lou at the beginning of the episode, but Lou at Lou Tep Minor.
We always have to call him out.
Yeah, he came in with the first question literally about a minute after I tweeted the
He probably has like notifications on and all.
Yeah. He said, "What percentage chance do you give us of making the playoffs?" So we talked a little bit about the table. Another thing, early season, we said, you know, if we are competitive for the playoffs, that's a good season.
Can we go back and find out what our predictions were?
Yeah.
I think we need to find out. But
yeah, we'll have to take a look towards the end of the season. But
yeah.
We're sitting 12th. We're just two places outside of that last playoff spot.
How many games do we have left?
And we've got 7 games to play.
So it's a 34-game season, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why I kept thinking it was 36.
No, yeah, 34 for the 18-team
You're right.
League, which I love. Like, quick sidebar, love about USL being that, because the reason I know it's 34 games is because the Bundesliga is also 18 teams.
Yeah.
But one thing I love about USL in its current format is we play a balanced schedule similar to Europe. You know, we play every team
home and
two
away.
Times home and away.
I mean, that's the way it should be in every league.
It should be, but it's not in MLS. So
I mean, even Liga MX does. I mean, they have separate seasons, but it's still
every league should be like that. I'm happy that now with this configuration of USL, they're able to do it because it just feels right. Now, at the same time, they could easily just give with it being single table. They could just put Phoenix straight into the final against whoever wins the East and call it good, but
yeah, they really should have.
But
I think Phoenix actually locked up the one seed.
Yeah, they are the one seed. Best case.
Remember when we talked about them at the beginning of the season when we were about to play them? They're coming off a bad skid. We're like, oh, maybe, you know.
Yeah, they drew 4 games in a row.
And look where we are now.
Little did we know. I mean, we should have known. Because they are a very talented team. But so with us sitting 12th, if you could put a number on it, what percentage would you say we have of making the playoffs?
Now, are we talking about getting into the, was it the playing games or?
Yeah, just
in general playoffs.
Just number 10,
top
10. 10th or higher, like, counts as making the playoffs. Because you do technically have a shot at making the final.
On an unbiased opinion, I mean, as a fan, of course, I'm going to say 100%. But analyzing everything, many people aren't going to be happy with me. But the way our form has been, I give us like 40%.
That's what, I mean, I was going to say 50. Like, at this point, I literally think it's a 50-50.
You just have to look at the form recently. And,
yeah.
I mean, let's look at the games we got coming up. It's, let's see, let me pull it up. We got to get our intern in on those.
Yeah, Colorado Springs is next, which we'll talk about the Colorado Springs match in a little bit. But
we're looking at this. We got Colorado Springs, and we got Sac Republic. Yeah, we got Fresno and Reno.
And Sac Republic is a very different team than the one that we beat at home. Now that they've got Anna Volson just scoring for fun out there.
After Colorado Springs, the rest of our matches are against playoff teams.
Yeah. Sac Republic, Fresno, Reno, Bold,
Portland, and LA.
Yeah.
So they're all playoff teams. It's going to be very tough. We've got three at home, four at home.
Yeah.
We've got four at home. Three are midweek, so you know the crowds aren't going to be that big. Yeah. But it's going to be a tough road ahead.
It's looking rough. We definitely don't have a... There's really no easy game on the schedule at this point in the season anyways. And now, like...
Our easy game is coming up.
That last six is really, like... It's one of those where, you know, going into any of these games, and the reason I put it at 50-50 is because when you look across any of these teams' schedules for the whole season, aside from Phoenix, you look at it and they'll beat a good team by three goals and then lose to a team by three goals. And so the form has been so up and down that it's just it's tough to... It's tough to actually say, oh, okay, this team, I think me and a San Antonio fan were joking about, like, the transitive property of USL because he was talking about, you know, San Antonio beat this team who beat this team who beat this team type thing. Like a college football kind of thing. But for me, I was like, Vegas beats New Mexico 5-1.
They lose 1-0.
New Mexico beats El Paso 3-0. El Paso beats Vegas 3-0.
Yeah.
So you just have these like crazy kind of outlier results that in these last seven games, literally anything can happen.
But I mean, the good thing, like as a fan myself, the way I look at it.
Yeah.
If you get into playoffs after these seven games, that means you got some momentum going against strong teams. And you're going to probably go up against one of these six teams that are in there in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which means you know what their recent form is like.
True.
So there is optimism if they can get in, because that means they're going in with the momentum. It's not like they're barely going to sneak in, because their position, there is no sneaking in. It's you got to get in there with full momentum or you're not going to get in at all.
Yeah. So, I'd say it's about a 50-50 toss-up right now for me. I think you're not wrong putting it a little lower. Just because of how spotty our form has been here in this kind of whole middle part of the season.
And looking at it, we've got a lot of Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Thursday.
Yeah.
Let me see. You go Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Thursday, Tuesday, Saturday.
So yeah, it's going to be
tight. A lot of games in a short amount of time.
Yeah. The next question at Jake Konecki, he asked, well, first he said he had anniversary obligations and missed the game, and understandable, no issues, congratulations on your anniversary as well. He said, so my question is, what the hell happened? Hopefully we just explained most of it. But he said, how excited are you for the Oktoberfest stuff? Craft beer and soccer doesn't get better than that. We obviously have talked about there's been a lot of giveaways. There's been a little bit of drama around the giveaways, all this stuff. But the giveaway for this one, Beer Stein.
They look amazing.
And, they look great. And Lokomotiv have taken care of Eighth Notch ahead of time this time.
Yeah, so word from Eighth Notch Heads is Lokomotiv will be providing 40, what are they, steins?
Steins, yeah.
Steins to the head of Eighth Notch, who will then go ahead and hand them out at Whiskey Blonde pregame. First 40 people to show up will get one. Outside of that, when it comes to the march and everything, they will not be handing them out to anybody else who does march. So if you do plan on getting one but not going to the pregame party at Whiskey Blonde, make sure you go stand in line. So, just want to put that out there for any clarification.
Yep. You will have a chance to get the steins ahead of time at Eighth Notch's pre-party or waiting in line at the stadium for them, as you normally would. But I'm
just really hoping they're not plastic.
Yeah, that's what...
like, I really hope they're not.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. But, Jake, I mean, as far as Oktoberfest, I mean, I am of German heritage myself, but El Paso has kind of a long history with German heritage. So them doing this homage, you know, to Oktoberfest, pretty cool event.
No, it really is. And I mean, with your, you know, how you said with craft beer and soccer, any kind of beer and soccer is amazing.
Yeah.
But just craft beer is always even better. El Paso never disappoints with Oktoberfest. I mean, it's always a great celebration. Even with the, what was it, the German Air Force that was here, right?
Yeah.
With them no longer here, I believe. Is that correct? I believe they, like, left.
Yeah, I think there's only a small amount of Germans still on Fort Bliss.
Even with the small amount, you know, they still go all out and celebrate it. So,
yeah.
It's myself, too, have a small German heritage in myself as well, so it's always great to see that.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and I mean, it's a game against Colorado Springs, so we're hoping for a good result, but we'll get to that in just a second. The last question that I have was at Texas Music Kid, do you think that Locomotive do enough advertisements to fill seats? Just curious. Marketing game. How do you feel about Locomotive's marketing game this season?
I will say this. I don't know how you feel, like, I'm just going to focus on this one topic. Billboards. There was a lot more earlier in the season. I don't know how you feel. Like, driving across town, I used to see a lot more at the beginning of the season. But marketing outside of that, I think they've done pretty well. They've reached out on social media, which is where most of marketing gets done nowadays.
Yep.
There's been a couple TV spots, so... Marketing wise, they've done good, but unfortunately, El Paso, we've talked about it before, is a fair weather city. If a team's not doing well, they're not going to come out. I mean, how look at it. We had the biggest crowd when we moved up in the first place a long time ago.
Yeah.
We had close to, what was it, like 8,500 people in the stadium, and then.
That was for.
I think that was against Vegas.
For Vegas.
Yeah, it was against Vegas. They lost 1-0, and we're back to, you know, 6,500 a game. And it does bring up a little concern, of course, any true fan worrying about, you know, stadium plans in the future, but it's a matter of bringing your friends out to the games, bringing out family, getting people into it. Like, I've noticed people just sitting in eighth notch that I would see at one game, and then I would see them again the rest of the season. Like, there's people who would just one game would go because somebody brought them, and then you would see them there the rest of the time from now on out.
Right.
So it's the marketing, I think, has been pretty well. Who knows, maybe we're exposed to a little bit more because we follow all their pages. But maybe that'd probably be my only thing, is just put up a couple more billboards. I mean, obviously, you guys have the money. Look, you guys just bought Bravo's, the franchise fee. So, obviously, Mountain Star has money, man. So.
Yeah, most of the marketing is done on social media. I think the team's done a good job. And I think as they're more established, I think there's almost more... It's a little bit strange because obviously the Chihuahuas, there was a big kind of initial surge of everybody was going to like every Chihuahuas game.
And now it's gone back down.
Because it was new and it was just like this brand new thing. Now, since it was starting in an area, you know, if Locomotive was the first thing to start, every game this season would be
sold
out. Like, it would be this huge kind of surge. Instead, I think it was almost met with like skepticism of like, okay, what is this? Like, I think people are still learning, especially in El Paso, which has, you know, huge amount of Liga MX fans, or, you know, fans of teams like clubs from elsewhere. There's a huge soccer population, but USL is new. And I think it's a new idea. I think people are still learning about
the league
and like what the quality of play as well. I think a lot of people don't understand that it is actually a good product and not.
Yeah.
I think when people hear about it, they're just like, oh, it's like minor league and is it professional? It's like,
it's like intramural, like, or something.
Yeah. Yeah, like I talk to some people who, you know, don't really know about it. And they're like, wait, it's a professional soccer team like in town. Yeah. Like, It's not, yeah, it's not freaking, you know.
But whatever. I think the league is the biggest thing because we look at it, like, when Bravos were back in Ascenso, like, they had, like, 8,000-9,000 people a game. Yeah. And now that they're, they're in Liga MX, they're selling out, like, every game, regardless of who's coming. So I think it's a matter of the prestige of the league that maybe some people aren't coming to, or, like you said, some people are very skeptical about it. I've heard the same thing, or, like, I was at a family party this past weekend. I kind of stole my cousin's TV or bombarded it to watch the game. And it, like, people would come up to me and be like, oh, so they're, like, a legit team. I'm like, yeah. They'd be like, are they even any good? I'm like, yeah, they're kind of fighting for a playoff spot, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think you're right. It's just a lot of people aren't entirely sure of what's here.
And I got to give a shout out. That is it for the listener questions this week. But I got to give a shout out. Across our different platforms, for our last episode, we had just a little bit of crossed wires or something. We didn't get the questions that came in on Instagram, so shout out to Fernie Elias and Vali Quintero for sending in questions on Instagram, and sorry for not answering them at the time. Now they're kind of moot because the losing streak is over, thank God. Fernie, really enjoyed your... your roast of Eric Winalda in the Instagram DMs, always entertaining. But Saturday, it's Oktoberfest for El Paso Locomotive, but Colorado Springs Switchbacks. God, just such a,
I always mix them up with the MLS team.
Yeah. Well, with the Rapids. Yeah. Well, and that's what I've had other people say, the Avalanche too, which is a hockey team. Hockey, so,
they're gonna play the Rockies this week, guys. You know?
Yeah, Rockies, Avalanche, Rapids, and Switchbacks. It's just too much. Colorado is way too outdoorsy. Yeah. But Colorado Springs coming into town. This is, aside from being a must win in terms of the playoff picture, when you're playing a team that's in 17th and has not won a game since July 20th, I mean, anything but a win is just unacceptable.
No, definitely. And I mean, especially playing at home. I think when we played them last time, we were kind of in the same notion, like, we need a win.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting, you know, playing them second time this season. Let me see. I'm looking at their past results. They lost 3-1 in New Mexico, tied bold. Lost 3-0 to Phoenix, lost 2-1 to Fresno, lost 4-0 to Sac. So, I mean, it seems like teams are kind of having their way with them, but with this Locomotive team all season, it seems like we can say, like, yeah, they're finally in form, they're going to get there, but we just never know. It's weird, man. This whole season's been a roller coaster that you kind of, like, just want to get off and watch, but at the same time, you want to ride it, so.
Yeah, Switchbacks. I mean, their last victory, as I said, came July 20th against at home against OKC Energy. So they're coming into this having not won in 7, 8, 9 in a row. We have been there as well.
Yeah.
So I can't hate too much. But with their position in the table and their lack of goal scoring, their top scorer, Jordan Burt, has 7 goals this season. My one concern is basically comes from what happened against Tulsa. We can't afford to let that type of result happen again.
Yeah.
This is a match where, you know, you'd expect Locomotive to kind of exert themselves on the game from that first whistle.
No, definitely. And I mean, you're right, we can't let the same thing happen with Tulsa. But looking at their goal scores here, it seems like the goals kind of come from all over.
Yeah.
Because they got Jordan Bird at 7, the next guy's up 5, then 4. Yeah, multiple players at 2 and 1. So it looks like, at least coming from them, when they do score, it can kind of come from anywhere.
Yeah.
So they got to definitely keep their eye out for that. But it'll be an interesting matchup. And like you said, we cannot go into this mentality. It's like when a college team goes up against an FCS school and, like,
sure,
oh, yeah, we're going to win this, and then it goes up the other way around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Locomotive definitely have to go in with the mentality that this is a must-win, but can't go in already handing themselves a victory even before the whistle's blown.
We talked about, obviously, Bassetti makes his debut in those last 25 minutes or so in the loss against OC. Is this the type of situation where we give Bassetti a start, try to get him out there while still, you know, while also trying to shake things up offensively?
I hope so. I think this would be a great opportunity for Mark to give Bassetti that experience in front of the home crowd, especially like we just talked about. We've got a tough stretch of six games after Colorado Springs coming up, so I think this is a perfect time to give him that start. I mean, I kind of wished he would have waited till this game to play him, just because the situation again against Orange County, but I'm hoping he puts him into the 11 and hopefully has a great game and kind of gets in sync with everybody else on the pitch.
One of the feel-good stories of this game, Seb Velasquez's father coming into town and is going to watch Seb play for the first time in 7 years. I mean, yeah. Such a cool opportunity for a guy who's added so much to Locomotive since he joined just a short time ago.
Yeah, and I mean, anytime family comes watching the ice play, it's always great. I got to meet Omar's parents. I got to meet Keder's parents. So who knows, maybe I'll try to make it out and meet his family too. But it's always nice to meet them, and they're always, you know, it's just nice knowing where they come from. And even that, I mean, another great thing about him, I think he just posted he'd been sober for 4 years.
Yeah.
For 4 years. So, I mean, it's kind of like everything's coming together for him up to this point. And hopefully that gives him a little more confidence going into the game that his father's going to be here to watch him and maybe puts one of those, you know, cutback goals in, you know.
I would love to see him, you know, have a moment where he can celebrate, you know, in front of and you know, with his dad, especially with such a long gap in time being, you know, between the opportunities to see him play, that it's just I don't know. I'm really, really happy for him, and I'm just, he's one of those guys that, aside from him being, you know, impactful on the field, obviously he's been, and especially the last couple of games, he's been a different class. He's looked so good.
Oh yeah.
But aside from that, he's just such a good dude to have on the team and to have as part of the community.
Oh, he really is. I mean, from day one that he's been here, he's had a huge impact on the community. He's a great guy. If you don't follow him on social media, you should.
Yeah.
He puts a lot of great stuff on.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's taking names down to take on one-on-one in basketball in the offseason. So, you know, but he is a great guy for the community. You can tell that he cares about this team. And I think we talked about it when they first brought him on. Hopefully, is. He did mention, I think he went like live on Twitter, even before he got here, that he was going to be here for 6 months. That's what his contract was.
Yeah.
And I think we're all kind of hoping that they extend it, you know, once it's over. Because not only on and off the pitch, he's a genuinely good guy. And he's the type of player you don't want to see go.
The rumor going around since he bought a house here.
Yeah.
So, first time he's owned a home. So... could that be a big sign that maybe he's sticking around for a little bit?
Maybe.
Or he's at least willing to stick around.
Yeah, at least willing to stick around. And I'm sure Mark wants him back.
Yeah.
I'm sure the team wants him back, you know. So, fingers crossed. Vasquez, if you're hearing, if they offer you a contract, I don't care how much it is, please sign it.
Please sign. Yeah, it is. He's obviously a great player. We're happy to have him, and I know he'll have a big impact before he leaves. But speaking of impact, it is ultimately about the result on Saturday, and we're looking at you know, a match where we really want to get on the front foot and do some damage against Colorado Springs, who, I mean, for their ability to, you know, they do have an ability to score goals. They have a couple of scoring draws in this winless run, but a big weakness of theirs is in conceding goals, with their defensive record, if I can,
they have a goal differential of -30.
Yeah, -30, and they've conceded 56 goals and kept just 5 clean sheets. And just for, you know, just for context's sake, Locomotive have conceded 30 and kept 11 clean sheets in just two less games played. So, I mean, for Lokomotiv, it's about turning those chances that they created against OC into goals.
Yeah, so hopefully they can do it. Are we going to do predictions?
Yeah, I gotta put you on the spot. And
I'm going to go a little bold here.
Okay.
I'm going to say
Austin 3. Bold.
Austin's going bold.
Austin is bold.
I'm going to say 3-0. Lokomotiv, of course.
Yep.
But I think we're going to have 3 goal scorers. I think it's going to be Velasquez. Omar's going to finally put one in. And I think Kiese Vetter gets back in the mix, too.
Okay. Yeah, I think I feel like that's about right. Like, any of the good home performances or the good home wins we've had have all been right in that, like, 2-0, 3-0.
Yeah.
Like, the most memorable games this season at home, you know, LA Galaxy 2,
3-0. Yeah, Los Dolos was one of them.
Yeah, like,
I went home smelling, like, beer that day. Like,
yeah. A lot of beer showers in a 3-0 home win. Yeah, I'm tempted to go the same route, but I'll go a little more conservative. I'll go 2-0, and I'll say, gosh, let's see who's gonna score. I'll go for. I mean, I want the feel good story. I want Seb Velasquez to score in front of his dad.
Yeah, that's the main reason I kind of
that's just like, and to get his first goal from open play. I'd like to see that, because obviously his first goal is a penalty. And then, I'll go for the new man. I'll just go for feel good stories all around. Alexi Bissetti.
I was thinking about Bissetti.
Grabs the second and, nice and late in the game where it's, kind of finishes things
just
off.
Wrap it up.
But yeah, I obviously we're mainly going to predict Lokomotiv wins because we're biased for the team.
Yeah,
but at the same time,
feels up to us to win all 34 games. You know,
but at the same time, it's almost about us just trying to will the team to getting these vital points at the end of the season.
It really is. I mean, hopefully a couple of them listen to us and they kind of get the confidence that somebody believes in them. You know, because we do.
Yep.
And, you know, we're at this part of the season where every point is vital, even if it's a tie, but you got to get the 3 points when you can get them at this point.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
It is getting into, I think the English would say, squeaky bum time.
Yeah.
It is down here towards the business end of the season, and every single match is super duper vital. So we're just sitting here hoping and praying each game that Lokomotiv can come out with a win.
Let's just do this. Lokomotiv, get 3 points at home and just get a point on the road, and we'll be good. Like,
yeah.
That's all you got to do. We're not expecting to win every game, but...
I know. Speaking with Mark, he is expecting or wants to win every game.
Oh, no, definitely. You want to win, but...
Even to the point where he said if they're drawing a game, he said, I'd almost take zero... Like, I'd almost take a loss over a draw if it means we're trying to win. Like, he's not going to go defensive in any of these games at the end of the season while tied.
Okay.
So, a little bit different approach than, beginning of the season, you think...
He would play for a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, I mean, if you get a 0-0 draw on the road, especially when you're winning your home games, it's like, this is, that's fine. Because... You come away at the end of the season, you're looking at like 60 something points and no issues.
You're on like Phoenix level.
But if you're not winning any games or you're drawing a lot, then at some point you gotta start grabbing all three. But it is it really is gonna be a tight running in the West, and regardless of what happens, it's going to be dramatic. It's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
It's probably going to come down to the final day.
I think it is, definitely.
Which is any league, any soccer league that comes down, where whether it's playoff places, the title or anything that comes down to that final day where you're scoreboard watching and you're like, okay, who's getting in, who's not making it. And you score and you move up. in the table to, you know, eighth or ninth or something like that.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, somebody else
scores. And someone else scores, and it's back and forth and all that. So I look forward to that as much of a heart attack as it'll give me. But, yeah, I hope you guys will stick with us here for this run-in here at the end of the season. If you guys have enjoyed this episode and you're not already subscribed,
what are you doing?
I would hope that you would like to be, and you can be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. There's a couple more Pocket Casts. I think we're on Stitcher. We're definitely on
Podcast Republic.
Yeah,
basically any podcast app. Really.
Yeah, you can find us wherever, and then and you can subscribe, or I think Spotify calls it following, but either way, you get the podcast straight to whatever device you want to listen on, whether it's your phone, your computer. And then if you're not following us on social, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you'll interact, get all the possible, you know, USL hot takes and memes that you could possibly want. All centered around our beloved El Paso Locomotive. So I hope you guys have enjoyed. And until next time, stay loco.